this is Ben Gillette in Las Vegas. Hey, you like this weather, huh, USA? Huh? This is what we live in. We chose this weather. The rest of you just getting baked unfairly, I think. But we chose it. We chose to live in hell. I'm sitting by, when I say we, I mean Michael Goudeau. I'm sitting across from me here. Mike Goudeau is the secret Tour de France rider. How far have you gone so far?
Oh, geez. About 80 hours.
So that means you've lost 8 pounds?
Yeah, I would think so. I haven't weighed myself. I'm trying not to till the end.
Michael Goudeau rides the Tour de France in his living room.
Yep.
What do you wear? Are you wearing a yellow jersey?
No, I don't get yellow till Sunday. I'm hoping to win the yellow jersey on Sunday. I'm in green right now.
Do you wear like something that would be appropriate for them, or are you wearing like a bikini or something?
I'm wearing a, yeah.
I just thought maybe, I didn't know how far your kink went. You know, maybe you wanted to wear clown makeup and a bikini and ride the Tour de France while watching it on TV and eating blueberry pie. I didn't know. I don't know.
That was my dream last night. How did you know that?
I don't know exactly how kinky you get. I don't know if you're doing clown porn. Is anybody on the bike with you? See, I didn't ask that.
No, you're just on the bike with me.
Your wife doesn't
come over. My family's out of town.
Ride with you? You know. Oh, that's horrible, isn't it?
It is horrible.
You miss your family a lot?
I do.
That's good. That's what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
And it's true, too.
It is true.
I had a lie about it when my wife and two kids went to L.A. for like 2 days. And I was missing them all the time. But it sounded so goddamn cheesy to say you miss your family. You know, it's just like, you know, you really, it's, you know, it's much less cheesy to say, you know, you're going to get a bunch of hookers and, you know, and go out or something. So all I did was I watched man movies with Jonesy and Junior. When I say man movies, I don't mean like real man movies, like a real man would watch, like gay porno. I mean, we watched, Air Force One. And the Untouchables, you know. We watched the Untouchables and Air Force One. And the big question coming, don't even bother asking me, during Air Force One I did cry in the scene with his daughter.
Of course.
When they're going to kill my girl. But I'm always laughing. I hate myself for crying, but I just do.
I cried for 5 hours on the Tour de France yesterday. 5 hours on a bike crying. Watching Floyd Landis, man, it was amazing.
Oh, was it?
I was. Yeah. I know you don't get that at all, but
I don't. I don't get the sports things at all. Although I understand them conceptually. If you described it to me, you could probably make me cry. But 866-570-PEN 7366 866-570-PEN 7366 PENradio@gmail.com PENradio.com. I feel better than I felt in 6 weeks.
You're looking good today.
Yeah, much better. I slept some. I'm off. I'm off the enormous painkiller. I just have a little bit of pain in my tooth, but it's pain. It's not like I'm on these drugged out painkillers. Because, man, I was high a few days. One night I went out and I was on these weird painkillers because I couldn't stop screaming from the stuff they did to my nerves. So they put me on painkillers and said, you'll be able to do the show on this. And I went out to start juggling. And, you know, I don't miss. I mean, you miss a lot juggling because it's part of your character. It's part of your character. But I don't. And I can't miss because I'm a smart ass and I'm cocky and I'm not supposed to miss. But I went out to start the trick and I had the three torches in my hand to start doing tricks. And I threw in the air and just went, I don't know how to juggle. I mean, when we played jazz before the show, right? All the tempos were slowing down. The show ran 8 minutes longer.
Like a real jazz bassist.
The show ran 8 minutes longer because I was on stage going, yeah, my name is Ben Gillette. This is my partner, Teller. It was an okay show, you know, but I came in last night to play and Jonesy went, oh, well, good. The bass player didn't show up stoned like last night. And he said to me, he went backstage to the crew the night that I was on the painkillers because the pain was enormous, you know. And I said, I'm going to do the show without painkillers. And the dentist said, you won't be able to. We won't be able to stop you from screaming. So they gave me this stuff. They said, very, very mild, very, very mild. And Josie came backstage and said, if I wanted to play with jazz musicians on drugs, I could have stayed at Berkeley. So that was all. But today I'm feeling good. So we're having a new feature for this Friday. Probably won't
be. We talked about it last Friday.
Did we? Yeah. Okay. We're going to try it today. We're going to say talk to Layman Penn. Today, there's nothing happening in the world except World War III.
Yeah.
Everything's starting up. The end of the world is at hand. The end times are now. People that are people that are like believe in the rapture, that like believe in Christ and stuff.
Yeah, they're putting stuff in their pockets so they can take it with them.
They're packing lunch. They're on. They got liverwurst sandwiches with some sort of, you know, communion wafer next to it, saying the rapture's coming. I mean, it's the Middle East. It's the final forces of, and in the final forces of good and evil. When Israel and Lebanon are throwing bombs at each other, where's good? Where's evil? I don't know. It seems like the bombs are being this blown up. Everybody's gone nuclear. It's the end of the world, and we want to give you advice in your personal life. Now, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr.
Right,
Laura.
Yeah, you don't want to use doctor?
None of those people are doctors.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it seems insulting.
Nobody checks.
It's no one. I could just say Dr. Penn.
Dr. Penn.
I could say, oh, yes, I have an honorary degree. Someone gave me that. But and that would be true, actually. I guess I could. And certainly as much as Phil or Laura can call themselves doctor, I certainly can. But I like the sound of talk to layperson Penn. Talk to layperson Penn. A lot of you have heard me on the radio talking for these times. You've seen Bulls hit. You've maybe seen the live show. You've seen some of the books and stuff. You know the kinds of things I know about. You know you're going to get a nut point of view. But if you have a sex question, a money question, I'll advise you on stocks. Money question.
You're not Jim Cramer.
No. When I said stocks, I was clearly in context. I was saying right after sex stuff. I mean, I'll advise you on bondage,
stocks.
Discipline, stocks, sure. Whips, chains. Child rearing, I could advise you on child rearing.
I can do stock, just like consomme. No, that's beef.
You know how to do a roux?
I can make a roux.
Ask about a roux. When I say ask layperson Penn a question, I will also have my faithful sidekick, Michael Goudeau, who knows an awful lot about all that coon-ass stuff. You're a forest ranger.
That's right.
If you've got a tree you're trying to graft, you can call us and ask us that. If you got questions about hockey, Goudeau can take that. If you want to know about Sun Ra and his career in jazz, anything about Bob Dylan, Neil Young, if you have personal problems. I haven't had personal problems, but I know people that have had them, and I can talk about that. So really, you can talk about anything today. This is wide open, and this is your chance. If you give us great calls, we can do wide open days sometimes. But if you don't give us great calls, if you don't pick up the blower and dial 866-570-PEN 7366, we're giving you a chance, give you a little bit more leads. Usually, we have little piles of paper in front of us saying, these are the subjects we're going to talk about. We talk to Jack and we say, Jack, what will get the phones going? And we say, oh, why don't you come out and say, get it on the lines, 866-570-PEN 7366. Why do they stop crybabying? You know, all that stuff. We try to say things that are provocative, you know, get the homeless out of the park, stuff like that, and get calls in. Now we're saying we're not going to be cheesy, we're not going to be provocative, whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about movies, music, your personal life. I keep adding your personal life because I think that where you make money in radio is talking to people about their personal sex lives. Now, you don't have to think that I know more than you about any of these subjects, because I don't. I am not Dr. Penn. I am layperson Penn. But if you think you might get a little bit of a giggle asking me a question about your personal life or about asking Godot about roostock. Roostock, is that right?
Roo.
Just roo. You don't have to motivate.
No,
ask him how to make a good roux, or you want to know about anything about that? I will do that. We have a call in already. Someone that wants to know personal advice from me, Andrea. This is Penn. Layperson Penn. Layperson Penn. But thank you.
I'm wondering if I don't understand what's going on with. We're trying to evacuate everybody from Lebanon. Well, what about evacuating people from Israel? I mean, they're getting bombed, and Lebanon's getting bombed. Why aren't... Am I, like, missing something?
I think that we believe... See, I'm talking to a woman, and this is a very, very sexual call. We're talking about getting bombed. We're talking about full frontal aggression here. I believe the reason is that we are very comfortable with Israel. We like Israel. We give Israel money. We try to back Israel a little bit. So we're thinking that Israel itself is not hostile to Americans, but Lebanon will probably get hostile to Americans. We're not trying to get Americans out of harm's way. We spend a lot of money recruiting them to put Americans in harm's way. That's part of our job. But we believe that if they're in Israel, they're among friendly people. And if they're in Lebanon, they're among people who might just turn on them and say, you know, it's Kill an American for Kicks Day here in Lebanon.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
I think that's it. I could be wrong. You know, I was so much more ready to talk about your sex life.
Much more layman than you thought.
No, it's not.
But there's nothing interesting about your sex life?
I'm married.
Oh, well, that doesn't mean anything. You can have a good sex life and be married. Well, anyways, that's what layperson Penn says. Thank you, Andrew. I was going to do a few more jokes about that, but she seemed to be uncomfortable. She was very comfortable talking about Jews being bombed. But when you talk about her sex life, that just kind of went right away. She just wanted to talk about that at all on the radio. And I don't blame her. I don't know if it's just right to... some people don't want to advertise all their personal stuff on the radio when they're talking to layperson Penn, but some people may want to. Let's talk to Jason. What's up, Jason?
Is this Dr. Penn?
No, it's not Dr. Penn. It's layperson Penn. Layperson Penn. Go ahead.
I do magic, and you gave me some of the best advice ever. I forget what book it was in, but you were talking about how you... you were at a convention and you saw a magician on stage. It was like a teenager, and there was this really hot assistant.
Uh-huh.
And it couldn't have been, it had to be his sister, because nobody who does magic in high school ever gets laid.
Right, that's true.
Yes, and I stopped doing magic and I got laid. But now I want to get back into magic, and I sort of want to have both. I want to have my cake and eat it too, so I was wondering if you could advise me.
What kind of
Hello?
Hey, what kind of magic do you want to get into?
Do a lot of, I do like mind reading, sort of bizarre. I do some sleight of hand.
Uh-huh.
I try to stay away from, you know, the corny stuff. I just saw a video the other day, and there was just some awful, awful magic on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still want to get laid.
Well, I'll tell you that what I believe about mentalism, and for those who don't know, mentalism is the magic term for any sort of mind reading. What John Edward does, you know, pretending to talk to the dead, is mentalism in the magic trade. I believe that intellectually, as a hobby, that mentalism is the most fascinating form of magic, because it's all real mind games. It's all really monkeying with people. And the technology, and I use the technology, the term technology, very, very loosely, because it doesn't mean machines, but the stuff that you can do to alter people's view of how much information they've given you and how safe things are in terms of getting written information off pieces of paper and things like that is really fascinating. The problem that you have with mentalism, although it's wonderfully entertaining and although it's really interesting to study, there is a moral difficulty, because if you say you can actually read minds, then you are scum. And you're a pig,
yes,
and destroy people's lives.
But I agree with that.
Penn and Teller have always, and there's about another five mentalists that do this, that say, see, if I say to you when I come out, I can read your mind, well, you have a few choices. Either you think that I'm deluded and I'm insane and I really believe it, or you think that I think you're stupid and I'm lying to you. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Or those are your basic choices, that I think you're stupid or I'm crazy. But I think that mentalism should always be done by saying there are no supernatural powers, but I can monkey with you in ways that are so much creepier than reading your mind and ways other people are using. And I would just go to any sort of good magic shop and pick up like any of the Phil Goldstein's book. His name is Max Maven, but he writes under the name Phil Goldstein. And the nice thing about mentalism is you can really have a lot of fun without doing the tricks. It's a really interesting way to learn how people respond to things and how to shift time and stuff. And also, I believe, of all magic, and this is really damning with faint praise, this is like, you know, talking about the fastest runner in the Special Olympics, but of all magic, mentalism is, I think, the sexiest. Because you can walk up to someone and say, I'm going to tell you your hidden thoughts using some method you don't understand. You know, like I'm going to tell you the color of your underwear if you want to be as basic as Chris Angel. But
I want to do it. I want to do it. professional. I know how to do all those things. I just want to do it professionally, and I don't want to...
Well, you just have to hang tough. You have to hang very, very tough and stay moral, and I think it's much more interesting than the way cheese balls like, you know, Mark Salem or Kreskin or the other losers do that. What do you do for a living now?
I'm a writer, and I work in a restaurant, I guess you could say.
Sure.
With what I do now, I'm just trying to pay the bills, but... You know, I write and I do magic.
I think there's a lot of room for really, really good mentalists. And I'm still waiting for a mentalist to hit the scene and get really popular who is smart, does fabulous tricks, and stays within a morality that I think is really important. And then really, I think once you say, I don't have special powers and I'm not really talking to your dead mother, then you can be as mean as you want. And no one has done the combination of mean, hit below the belt, rip your face off, coupled with a completely moral standing. So that's what I would say about that.
Okay.
So thanks a lot. Oh, go ahead.
I have one more question.
Sure.
I actually called up a couple of weeks ago about the Penn and Teller get killed. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Thanks a lot, man.
And when Teller grabs those pigeons, can he really do that?
Well, this is the great thing. I wrote the scene in where Teller says, you know, reach down and grab a pigeon and just grab it. And I was walking through New York. And there'd be pigeons, and I'd be with people, and I always thought, you know, the coolest thing to do would be able to just go boom and just strike out and grab a pigeon. So we were going to do it in the show, and I never tried it. And then we got this, like, pigeon wrangler who supposedly had, like, slow, doped-up pigeons. And they were over there trying to work out the method for Teller to do it. And I went to the other side of the park where we were working where there were real pigeons, and I threw down some bread, and some pigeons came around, and I just said, all you've got to do is really want it. You're fast enough, Penn, go. And I reached out fast, and I touched the pigeon, and it scared me, because it's a flying rat all full of, like, parasites and stuff, and I didn't really want to touch it, so I let it go. And then I said, Penn, you're just being a wimp. You can do it. You need to want it. Want to hold that maggoty, squirming flesh in your hand. You know, because pigeons, you know, and then the thing, once you grab it, it's going to want more than anything to get away, and then it's just going to be so it's going to be just. And I was going to use the phrase "triumph of the will," but that's a little bit politically incorrect. So the pigeon is there, and they're over there working on the other side of the thing, and I'm over with the wild pigeons, and I go there and I just go boom, and I just grabbed it, and I'm holding this pigeon in my hand. It was no problem to grab it, but I had to keep thinking through and keep wanting it, and I kept wanting it. And I held this pigeon in my hand, and I held up and said, "I can do it! I can do it! We don't need the fake pigeons. I can do it. I can do it." And everybody looked at me, and I just let the pigeon go. Be free now. Be free. Go. Be free. And then they all said, "You cannot do that. You cannot do that." And I said, "Yes, I can." Waited for a few more pigeons to gather, and then, like the pigeon whisperer, I walked up and went, you're going to walk. Boom! And I grabbed another one. I said, "Look! I got the pigeon! I got the goddamn pigeon!" And then I went over to Teller, and I coached him, and I said, "Teller, the problem is you don't want to touch that pigeon. You don't want to touch him at all. I don't want to touch the pigeon. But we have, you know, like these hand cleaners afterwards. You can go in your trailer and wash up. Don't touch your face. Don't eat the pigeon. Just grab it." And Teller went over the pigeons, reached down, and grabbed the pigeon. And I thought it was the greatest looking trick ever. We got it on film, and I'm just really surprised. If you're a magician and you're like on a date and you're walking along with, you know, with a woman or a man or something, your friend of yours, and you're walking along and you see a bunch of pigeons and you go, you know, to study magic and to learn mentalism like I've done, I've had to learn to be really perfect and really fast. See that pigeon there? Boom! And you grab it, pick it up, hold it, show it to her, and then, whoo, be free! Be free! And then you've shown that you have this incredible... You ever caught a pigeon, you know?
I have not.
I'm so happy you called, Jason. This is the best call I've ever gotten. I've got to go to break. But I'm telling you, a lot of you people are on the streets of Chicago, New York City. Grab a pigeon. Grab a pigeon, hold it in your hand, then let it go, and then call us and tell us about it. It makes you feel like king of the world. This is Layman Penn, 866-570-PEN, 7366. We'll be back. This is Penn Jillette. There's a long pause there. I had pigeons on the brain. We have a very special Penn Jillette show today. We're talking... Well, opening up everything. Just it's called Ask Layman Penn. Any question you want to ask, I'm really willing to answer it. Great question about catching pigeons, or I turned it into a question about catching pigeons. If you've read Gabriel Marquez's story of a shipwrecked sailor, you know Marquez, who wrote 100 Years of Solitude,
yeah, sure.
Love the Time of Cholera. He wrote a story, not a story, a true accounting. He wrote it for someone who had that happen. I don't know if it's stories or memoirs or something, of a shipwrecked sailor. It's a great book. It's really short. You can read it quick. And it's about a guy who's adrift for like something like 3 weeks on the ocean alone. And there's the most frightening scene ever, where the first night he's on his own on this boat in the middle of the night, no moon, dark. He has a watch. He has a watch and a lighter that he can look at the time, and time is going so slow, and he's so lonely and scared. He puts his watch down and says, "I promise myself I will not look at the watch until at least an hour has gone by." He waits what he's sure is an hour, flicks on the light, and it's been 3.5 minutes.
Oh.
And he's out there for 3 weeks. But there's a scene in there where he schemes all day. He's so hungry. He's eating his shoes. And he schemes all day to catch a seagull, right? He's going to catch a seagull and eat it. So he's got this, like, little trap set and a little bit of, like, bait that he got out of the water. And there's seagull. And he has to wait patiently for, like, you know, 8 hours for this seagull to get comfortable enough, to get close enough. And he reaches out and grabs the seagull and gets a hold of it by the leg. And then with his bare hands, he rips apart the seagull to eat it because he's starving, and drink the blood because he's dying of thirst. And he rips it open, and it's full of worms and maggots. And it says, "I learned while I was shipwrecked, there were some things I'll never be hungry enough to eat." And that's what I think about with the pigeon. It's me and the pigeon. Mark Garland, the guy who used to work for us, used to run fast enough to almost catch squirrels.
Really?
Yeah. He'd get a squirrel, you know, and he'd get running. I think there's no greater, you know, Ted Nugent can talk about hunting and bow hunting and stuff. I want to meet a guy who does just barehanded hunting, runs after things and takes it down.
You know,
when
by I was
himself.
A kid, we used to hide and hit deer with rocks.
Yeah, that's not just your hands. That's not just your hands.
I know, but that's, you know, that was one of our games.
Now this is here's a little letter from Kate. Max. I guess she says, it doesn't matter, it's Katie or Max or somebody. "This is my personal experience for the ex-magician who wants to do magic and get laid. I married a magician, not a mentalist, because I agree with Penn on the fact that they are scum, partly because the guy who set us up said, you know, he's good with his hands. He was right, and I'd never be with another non-magician again." And Katie, imagine how fully excited, perfectly lubricated you would be if you'd caught a pigeon with his bare hands on your first date. I'm surprised the phones aren't lighting up with people doing this all over. Another quick letter for Layman Penn. He says Dr. Penn, but it's Layman Penn. "Dear Penn, why don't we move all Israelis to Mexico? They'd be closer to the United States and also would help the economy of Mexico." Yes, this is my idea. I don't think America should fight over land anywhere in the world. If there's a conflict, we take jumbo jets that people from that country who now live in the U.S. donate money for. You'd get plenty of Jews in the U.S. to get jumbo jets. You fly them over to Israel and you say, "Load them up. Come back here. You want to live in the desert? We got desert. Come on to the Mojave. Set it up." Anybody who's being attacked by evil foreign powers, like what we didn't do during World War II, you know, we let the ships just go around. Let them all come into the U.S. Come on over. We have plenty of room. Have a good time. But if you want to fight for a piece of land that you think God gave you, stay there and die. Layperson Penn. That's what I'm saying. So, yes, I agree completely. So I don't think we have to go to Mexico. New Mexico is fine. Move all the Israelis there. Let's talk to, they're all good. I have no idea. Let's talk to Camellia. Is that right? Camellia?
Hi, Camellia. How are you?
Hello, Dr. Penn.
It's not Dr. Penn. It's Layperson Penn. Okay, go ahead.
It sounds so much sexier, though.
If it sounds sexier, I am Dr. Penn, Camellia. I am Dr. Penn.
Punched
PhD.
I lied. Happy Jack made me say that. I wanted to call you sexy, brilliant Layperson Penn.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Okay.
You're going to be on for the rest of the show, so
take
your time.
I love it.
And Jack is fired.
What can I say? He seduced me. I couldn't help it.
I know. You're a girl who can't say no.
That's right.
A girl can't help it.
Yep.
What's up?
I need some advice from a man that's crazier than myself.
Okay.
Not that I'm a man, but I need someone that can maybe help me out. I have had just a series of this bad... bad news. Most of it health-related, uh-huh. all within like a month period. So right now what I'm looking at is a broken heart from a man that's not worth discussing.
Okay.
A broken body from various problems, one of which is like a genetic disease that I can do nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And a broken car.
What do you mean a genetic disease you do nothing about? They can't even treat it?
Well, it's progressive.
Uh-huh.
There's no cure. There's treatment. But unfortunately, the medication that they're going to put me on
mm-hmm.
is going to, it has really horrible side effects, like severe birth defects. Like 100% across the board, severe birth defects.
You don't have any children yet?
No, I don't. I have no intentions of procreating any time in my lifetime. So I want to be a biological failure.
The birth defects then for you is not a problem if you're not going to procreate. Right, okay.
The mental disorders that come with this medication is my concern. That and the change in vision.
Oh, geez, yeah, that's a bad one.
Yeah, so those are my two main concerns. It's just basically what it does is it will dry out all the moisture in your body.
Ooh.
So some people will end up they can't wear contacts anymore. That's what I wear.
Uh-huh.
So it affects their vision, especially at night.
You would look very sexy in glasses.
I know I got some badass glasses. They got the black rim with the rhinestone.
Sure. Oh,
I prepared ahead for an event.
Kind of cat shape, kind of Betty Page, kind of 1958.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's working for me. Keep going.
Right,
I solved one of your problems.
So, you know, it's like I have all this bad news, and it's usually I can take this stuff in stride. You know, usually I got a pretty good sense of humor, and that's gotten me out of a lot of stuff. Right now, it's like really, really hard to focus on that.
And even your car's broken down?
My car just died. I had an interview for another job yesterday, and I had to cancel that because I went to lunch with a coworker. Car started up fine, went to leave, didn't start at all, wouldn't even turn.
Oh, amazing.
I had to have it towed.
Line of work are you in?
Huh?
What line of work are you in?
I work actually with an insurance company.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to be staying here. I'm going into graduate school.
Oh, I see.
Did your coworker leave at any point to go to the bathroom?
No, she did not. She
and were they in the same field?
No, actually, it was like a billion degrees outside, so she suffered in the heat with me until my boss would come pick me up.
Well, you know, I'm actually gonna give you the best advice that I got when really bad things were happening to me. When my mom and dad were dying, I had a lot of people that consoled me and did all this stuff, and very kind, wonderful people who told me, you know, they lived a long life and, you know, you're happy and they'd want you to blah, blah, blah. And then I had one friend who happens to be a writer on The Sopranos, who I can't, of course, quote because his language is soprano-like, but he said, anybody that calls up and says everything's okay, you're going to get through this, just tell them F you. Just tell them that straight out. Tell them to die. Tell them to choke on their own vomit. The worst thing in the world is happening to you. If you accept that, it's the only way you can get through it. And for some reason, that piece of advice, the piece of advice that said, don't look on the sunny side, but this is really bad, was very, very helpful to me. And I think that you've got sincerely bad stuff happening. You don't sound like some whiny bitch who's making up stuff. You know, my cappuccino wasn't made properly, so I'm going to kill myself. Or, you know, Britney's new album sucks. But you've got real, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding-around problems. And I think it's okay to not try to be, you know, I'm Dorothy Parker and I'll be an alcoholic, my life ruined, but still say funny stuff. I think you can swear some, and I think you can throw some punches, and I think you can get angry. And I also think you can learn a little magic and get laid. All of that will help tremendously. But your first step with the glasses is a very, very good step. What are you going to go to graduate school for?
Philosophy.
There you go. That'll help. That'll help.
Sure, you're right.
Big pizza fan.
What's that? Mother died last week, or maybe it was the week before. No, mother died yesterday, maybe the day before, right? Isn't that Camus' first line to the stranger when you're getting your existentialism? Not that I want to be able to quote all existentialism, but it's a. I think it's exactly the position you're in. Mother died yesterday, or maybe it was the day before. But listen, how delightful and sexy are you? You're just great. You're just doing great.
I'm wonderful. That's why it makes me so mad about that guy.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's... That is the price you pay for living in a godless universe full of pain.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll tell you, and I bet you're already on this page, but I don't think it hurts at all to reiterate it. When my mother was dying, and she died very slowly in a huge amount of pain, she kept saying, you know, why is this happening to me? And I said, the only thing I can tell you is there's no reason for it happening to you.
Yep.
And that, to me, like people say that, you know, their religion got them through hard times. My lack of religion got me through, because if I had to think for a second that there was somebody or something in the universe that had power and was not using that power to help me through this strife, I think that the...
You'd want to kick their ass.
Yeah, but I would also go to the bottom of despair. So the fact that this is happening to you for absolutely no reason is something I think to hold on to.
It really is. I've kind of thought about that, too. And it's like, you know, I had those moments of, why is this happening? I'm like, that's how it is.
Yeah.
You know, no one's sitting there planning, okay, we're going to strike her down today.
Yes. We live in a godless universe full of pain, and while we're living here, we might as well get laid and wear really cool glasses. Thanks a lot. I got to go for a break, Camelia. Thanks. This is layperson Penn Jillette at 866-570-PEN-7366, PennRadio.com, PennRadio@gmail.com. Getting a lot of people who want advice from me, and why wouldn't they? quick letter from Don that says, I'm in the process of making a bullet catch trick using an airsoft gun. I don't know what an airsoft gun is, but and wanted to know some advice. I'm using a lot of the Banachek method. Banachek is a magician who's worked with us. He's wonderful. I've seen you do a version with a bean and a slingshot that was on Letterman. And the double bullet catch, which we do on our show at the Rio every night. Just wanted to know what you think and if you'd give me some advice. Well, what I think is I don't know what an airsoft gun is. But my advice is remember 12 people, 12 magicians and two carnies, 14 people.
No people.
14, exactly. 14 human beings, minimum, have died doing the bullet catch. That's not a joke. That's not a gag. It's a trick where you have audience members, real guns, and live ammunition on stage, and you can die. Teller and I worked on our version for a year and a half every day before we tried it once. It's a really complicated, tough trick. We think we're careful enough to do it and not get hurt, but I bet that a lot of the 14 people that died thought that too. So all I can say about the bullet catch is you've got to be so careful. As a matter of fact, I think for legal reasons, my advice to you is do not do it. It's just too dangerous. Teller once said about the bullet catch, there are two methods for doing it. One is really easy to see through the trick, and the other method, you die. Now, we use a different method than other people that I'm not going to disclose, but you still have to be very, very careful. Let's take a call. Let's talk to Claudia. Hey, Claudia, this is Layperson Penn. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Penn. It's good to speak to you.
What's up?
Okay, I have a pet peeve, Dr. Penn, that I'm hoping that I can hear your advice about. As a fellow atheist, I have a particular problem when I hear people who claim to be non-religious or agnostic or whatever else, and then these same people go on to speak about karma.
Yeah.
And I would like to know your thoughts on karma, which I think is the biggest crock of poop.
You know, the people that you dislike, the amount that you dislike them is one-tenth of how much I hate those sons of bitches. I think when you can take the whole step to believe you're living in an objective universe that we can all share and human beings can talk to one another and learn and grow and love each other, and then you bring in this ancient, psychotic, nebulous point of view of karma just because you read it in an adult cartoon when you were 16, when you were stoned, it makes me crazy. The reason I think that people who are otherwise pretty sensible will use the phrase karma is it's a pretty nice shorthand, not one that I approve of. You know, I'm talking like now about how Richard Dawkins talks about when awe is put into a religious context, like you have such awe and at the glory of the universe, and you slip in to using religious words for that. I think for karma, If you want to get ahead in business, if you want to be successful, if you want to have a happy life, if you want things to go well for you, it works out best if you treat people well. And that's not karma. That's just logic. And it's just objective
respect.
Reasoning and respect. It's just a way to think of that. But using that shorthand, I think the idea of karma is a very good thing, but using the shorthand of a superstitious point of view makes me sick. So all I can say to help you is, however angry you are, I'm bothered more. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk to Miriam, shall we?
Sure.
What's up, Miriam?
Hey, is this Dr. Penn?
Well, no, this is actually layperson Penn, but many call me Dr. Penn, it turns out. What's up?
Well, sir, I am calling you because you asked people with pigeon stories to call in.
I guess
catching
I kind of did.
Yeah. Catching pigeons in New York.
Oh,
and yeah. I have a hell of a pigeon story because my father, when he was a young man...
Was a pigeon?
...in New York.
Oh, well.
What was, well, you know, we needed the ex. But, he was... A young kid, he was out at Coney Island,
mm-hmm.
and he was eating a potato knish. And uh-huh. he had eaten half the potato knish, and he got bored, and he said, all right, you know what I'm going to do with the other half of the potato knish? I'm going to catch a seagull. And so he found a box and a stick, but he couldn't find a string. So his brother's like, there's no way you're going to catch a seagull without a string to pull the stick away and catch it. He said, all right, well, I'll catch a pigeon. Pigeons are stupid. I'll catch a stupid pigeon. Instead of catching.
I thought I'd interrupt you right now and say, I love this story more than anything I've ever heard. Go on.
So instead of the seagull, he aimed for a pigeon. He aimed a little lower. So he put the potato knish under the box. He propped the box up with the stick. Bam. Pigeon walks straight into the stick, catches itself.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what makes this story even sweeter is, as I said, it's a family story, and I've recounted it many times. I was
sure.
telling my friend this story. You know, I went to school in New York, and I was telling him this story. It was dead of winter. And when I got to the end where he catches the pigeon, I reached over my friend's shoulder and picked up the pigeon that was sleeping on the ledge behind him. Freaked him out.
What?
It's a great visual.
Tell that again. You were talking to a guy and reached behind him and pulled out a pigeon?
The pigeon was just asleep. It was perfect.
But he didn't know the pigeon was asleep.
He didn't know the pigeon was asleep. I had gloves on, so I, you know, avoided the whole ick factor. It was good.
Oh, and you just were talking to a guy? Was this a guy you were romantically involved with at all?
It was a friend of mine. He wasn't that, but a friend of mine.
Oh.
My boyfriend's heard this story so many times, he wouldn't even be impressed if I pulled a pigeon out of my ear.
I was so surprised by the last word of that sentence. That is great. That is great. See, wasn't the friend really, really impressed at your pigeon prowess?
He was incredibly impressed, and had I wanted to sleep with him, I probably wouldn't have had a problem.
Thank you so much, Miriam. See, this is a... Oh, sorry. I thought you were probably going to say something else, but Goudeau is a cruel rule.
I'm on it.
You're on it. You're on it right away. We have Dear Dr. Penn, DDS. Okay, it's actually Layperson Penn. But which is the better title for a dystopian novel starring the world's first intelligent chimp? Prolay Troglodytes? Or A Brave New World Monkey. The former is based on the... How do you pronounce that word? P-R-O-L-E-S.
I don't know.
It's from 1984, but I never said it out loud. Is based on 1984 and the scientific name for chimps. Troglodytes is the scientific name for chimps?
I don't know.
That
I don't
can't
think
be
so.
Right. This guy's high.
P-R-O-L.
P-R-O-L?
Prol.
It says P-R-O-L-E. It says
P-R-O-L-E is how you spelled it, but it's pronounced Prol.
Oh, it's pronounced Prol. Okay.
Prols would be, it's a member of a working class.
Okay. Well, for proletariat.
Right.
Prol.
There it is.
So that's bingo. So Prol Troglodyte, the former is based on the Proles of 1984 and the scientific name for chimps, which he says is troglodyte. I don't believe so. The latter makes no sense, but it's much more fun to say. A Brave New World Monkey. I go with A Brave New World Monkey, you know, because I wanted to call my novel Sock. It was called, and all the time I was working on it, I called it Bad Monkey. I wanted to call it Bad Monkey. I wanted monkey in there. And then all my friends that I showed it to said, you've got to get the word sock in there. It has to be called sock. So I think if you want my opinion, and you obviously do because you called Dr. Penn, I think a brave
Dr.
New World Monkey. Yeah, I'm Dr. Penn now.
Delusions of grandeur. What the heck's happened here?
Yeah. Let me see. You want to take another call here?
Troglodyte is someone who lives in a cave, by the way, the official definition.
Troglodyte, someone who lives in a cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe one day we'll do Troglodyte Tuesday. We can. No. That's just wrong. If we decide on that, there will be new music. I mean, maybe from now on there'll be Pigeon Catching Friday or something. We can. okay, I want to. There's a movie question here. Let me see what this is. I'm going through the... Oh, this is a long one. In Demolition Man, there was no toilet paper. I don't know if I know enough about this. Here we go. Dear Layman Penn, on your show, you've expressed libertarian opinions, such as the belief that we should do away with the FDA and with public schools. Yeah-huh. Do you think we should do away with public libraries as well? Personally, I think the public library is the greatest use of tax dollars ever conceived. Best regards, JD. I agree with you that it's probably the best use of tax dollars ever conceived, and I would like to do away with it. I think that if it were done privately, it would be better. We have proof. I mean, Barnes & Noble will let people sit in there reading and researching for the entire time they're open. They don't seem to ever throw anyone out if they're within the proper etiquette that would keep you in a regular library. I also think that so many private organizations, Bill Gates Fund and so on, would open libraries, and I think that private libraries would be able to not have to keep everything exactly the way the whole government wanted it, and they'd be able to have different kinds of reading sections. Or libraries where you may be paid a very nominal fee, kind of like the equivalent of Netflix, you know, where you spend like that amount of money, you can go in there and take X number of books out and put them back. I think getting rid of public libraries would be an absolute fine and a dandy idea, both of those in order. I've just gotten this from Jocasta. Jocasta's a good friend of mine who I love dearly and who's right about everything. And she says, troglodytes is the correct science word for chimps.
Really?
That's what she says. You're going to go up against Jocasta? Have you met Jocasta?
No.
Okay. When you meet Jocasta, you'd think twice before going up against her. Let's go with...
Pan Troglodyte. No, he's right.
Say what?
Right.
Quickly, okay. Let's go with James. What's up, James?
Hey, Dr. Penn.
Actually, it's layperson Penn, but go ahead.
Yeah, sure. first of all, I'm kind of afraid that, like, because of the show, because of you... we'll hear some way down the road from now, Scientology will come out with OT9, which will give you the ability to grab pigeons at will.
Yeah, eat my dust, Ron Hubbard. Ron Hubbard, is that right?
Hell Ron
Hubbard. Eat my dust, L. Ron Hubbard, yeah. Have you tried catching a pigeon yet?
No, I'm in Hollywood, but so there's pigeons, so.
You should be able to catch a pigeon. There are pigeons in
catching
Hollywood.
Catching a pigeon means something else entirely.
Okay, there is that. In either sense, you should catch a pigeon. But you're right. It could be. Do you have another thing to say? Or?
Oh, I have a question. I'm not too sure how in tune with technology you are. There is programs out there for like downloading television shows over the computer.
Uh-huh, I know that.
And I wanted to know what was your moral stance on that, because you could go on the computer right now and download all seasons of your TV show.
Right, I know that, and I know that people do. Theoretically, I think it's wrong to steal content like that, but I think that the whole system is going to have to change because it's the way people want to have it. So I would always rather pay for things and get them free, almost without exception. So I do think it is wrong, but I don't fight against it that hard. We're at the end of the show, and why don't you just copy this and send it around without giving me credit? This is Ben Gillette. We'll be back Monday, and maybe some other day you'll be able to ask layperson fans.